Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. This is Veronica Entwistle. And who are the Paradigm Shifters that I'm interviewing are people that I deem, that's being kind of arrogant, isn't it, are making quite a difference in the collective at this time in history. And there are people who are making a difference by being conscious about something that helps us empower our lives in the collective so we can become more in truth with ourselves, more responsive to messages, and able to create a difference. So my paradigm shifter today is a very exciting woman named Cal Ori. Is that how you say your name?
Yep. Uh-huh. Ori.
And Cal is an author and an intuitive and an awful lot more than that, who has quite a bit of a specialty on sensing earthquakes. And we're going to talk about that first once we say, hi, Cal, welcome to the show.
Hi, Veronica, and hi, everybody out there.
We're very excited to talk to you. And when did you first notice that you could sense earthquakes?
You know, we discussed this before, and I thought about it. I said 2004 when I wrote The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes about Jim Berglund, Maverick geologist, the man who predicted the World Series quake.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I believe that I began sensing quakes when I was 12 years old. I'm a native, I didn't tell you this, I'm a native Californian, and I remember the Great Alaska earthquake in 1964 on Good Friday. I saw the pictures in National Geographic, and I remembered the news and my parents talking about it. And I've always had a very vivid imagination being an author. And when I saw those photos, it really had an impact on me. You know, the snow-covered ground and great crevices and causing a tsunami all the way down to Northern California, Crescent City, and it had a huge impact on my mind. And that's when I put it together that, hey, we're not safe either. I was born and raised in San Jose. That is sandwiched in between the San Andreas fault line, the Hayward fault line, and the Calaveras fault line.
Mm.
And that's when I started getting a little bit edgy. Mm. And by the time I was 16, there was a book out and a lot of talk about California falling off into the sea. And I am so gullible, and with the vivid imagination, I used to look out our living room window and imagine the Pacific Ocean from Santa Cruz Beach coming over the Santa Cruz Mountains like it really could, coming to our house and drowning us.
Wow.
That's where I was at. And I was nicknamed by my woodshop teacher, Earthquake Annie. Everybody thought I was out there crazy. But
well, that's because you were afraid, but not because you're actually predicting them at that time.
No, but I was sensitive to the earth changes, and I didn't like feeling powerless. And everyone I talked to would just hush me up, or they would just say, well, every state has its problem. So I didn't have the wonderful people that I have now, sensitive people that actually can sense an oncoming earthquake, from pets to wildlife, myself, and other humans all around the world.
Hmm. How exciting, except that I have to say this. Isn't it a little scary to know when they're coming, A, and B, how do we make ourselves more powerful because we know that?
I don't think it's scary. I think it's extremely exciting, and I think it's great that you know when the big boogeyman's going to come and get you. You have to remember, though...
That's a horrible way to put it.
Well, you have to remember that in the United States, the quakes can be devastating. They have been. I mean, Alaska, what was it, a 9.2? The World Series, a 7.1, and that was scary. I mean, you couldn't even stand up, and, you know, I endured that. But the quakes here, for the most part, are not like the Italy quake, which we all saw on TV, and that was catastrophic, where the buildings all come down. So the quakes here, they can be great quakes. We have had them in the New Madrid zone, you know, in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Even last year, a 5.2 was felt in 16 states. But so scary, yeah, quakes are scary. Even the 6.2 that I was in 1984 in the Santa Cruz Mountains on the Morgan Hill quake, that was scary. I fled outside. I was all alone, but I couldn't sense it. I think it gives you a sense of empowerment if you know what's coming and you can get prepared. And that's really cool.
So wait a second. Well, sometimes you sense them and sometimes you don't. So what's in that?
I have a pretty good track record, to be honest with you, and right now I'm on edge because we have a seismic lull in the Pacific Northwest and Bay Area. A lot of us are sensing something's going to happen because of the weather conditions. Yesterday it was 100 degrees in San Francisco. It's really quite warm for April.
And it's pretty unusual for San Francisco.
It is. It is. And they did have a lot of rain, and they even had snow this year. And that can do strange things to the Earth's crust, where Jim Berkland, a geologist, has taught me that could actually trigger a quake in the future. And it has in the past, and it could again in the future. So we're coming into a new moon. The tides are really erratic for the next week, I think starting the 24th. If you just look at a tidal graph of like the Oakland Pier or the San Francisco, they're just really up and down, up and down. The animals that get disoriented before a quake, they're a little bit up in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I'm going by all of these. And the more cues that you have, the more likely a quake may happen.
Well, it's interesting because I see in your body you have, I would say you're acutely sensitive as it is, but you have quite a unique vibrational rapport with the earth.
Yeah, and I don't like that, and I'm trying to deal with that. I think I told another visionary we spoke this morning, I feel very, very grounded when I'm swimming, and I'm a dedicated swimmer. I swim several times a week, and when I'm in the pool swimming laps, I'm in the zone, and I feel so comfortable, and for the rest of the day, I just feel an even keel, very grounded.
Hmm.
When I get the cues like anxiety or a headache or dreams, visions, of an oncoming quake, if my animals, all three are seismically sensitive, isn't it wonderful? My two Brittany's is a very sensitive breed, and my black cat.
Mm.
They're all sensitive. They have a wonderful track record when they start acting out, either being clingy, extremely affectionate. The cat will be vocal and pacing. That's what makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. It's like being on an airplane where I soak up everyone's negative energy. A lot of people don't like to fly. And when the plane ascends and descends, I pick up all of that.
Hmm.
When I was on my last book tour, it was bad. I did not like that. It wasn't scary. It was just a very uncomfortable feeling.
Hmm. That's your very sensitive little body, huh?
Yeah, there you go.
So let's jump back to your book. You opened us talking about your book, The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes. And did you say that his name is Berkland?
Yeah, it's Jim Berkland. Back in when I was in my early 30s, finishing up graduate school at San Francisco State, he's from San Jose, and he was the San Jose County geologist, and he was predicting earthquakes. And a lot of his predictions and his hits, when you make an accurate prediction that comes true, they were published in the San Jose Mercury News, and I was fascinated by his theories following the lunar cycles, following the tides, and lost animals. And he, being an animal lover, always having a dog and a cat, and me always having a dog and a cat, that was our bond. He reminded me of my dad. And I interviewed him the first time on the phone, and he was so energetic, a Leo, and I was so intimidated because he was so full of scientific ease that way over my head. I could not comprehend everything. He's really he's a scientist, and he was different. He's slowed down a little bit now, you know.
Were a journalist in those days, were you?
Yeah, and I was very green, so it was
a
just,
green journalist. Well, that's fashionable these days.
But no, I fell in love with his theories, and then when I finished graduate school in 86, I started writing magazine articles for the pet magazines, national pet magazines, about how the pets would sense earthquakes, like the Northridge 1994, Palm Springs quake 1986, and then I was talking with him before the Loma Prieta or the World Series quake, which he coined and predicted. And my animals were acting out, but I didn't really I knew, but I didn't. If my animals today were doing what my animals were doing back then, I would know immediately. But I was just like kind of overwhelmed with the information he was giving me. He was a scientist at work. He was seeing, you know, the beached whales. He was seeing how the lost and pet, when you look at the Santa Fe Mercury News and San Francisco Chronicle, and if you look at the lost and pet cats and dogs, he was seeing how the numbers were soaring. They were up in the 50s, which is extremely high.
And that's an indicator?
Yeah. Animals can sense, not all animals, but seismically sensitive animals.
So does it mean that they start leaving and end up out of the
reach? They get the fight or flight syndrome, just like some humans can.
Wow.
And they'll want to bail. They don't feel safe in a house. Like my own, I had a Siamese, another sensitive breed. And when we had the foreshock, August 8th, 1989, she went outside, and she was an indoor cat only. She would not come back into the house, only to be fed. She lived in the morning glory bushes right by the side of the house in San Carlos. It's on the in the peninsula of the Bay Area.
Yep.
She would not come in until after October 17th. And at that time, I had no clue. I didn't know, you know, what her trip was at all.
So she knew that it was better to be outside.
Yeah, smart cat.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a yellow lab, another sensitive breed, and the week prior she was pacing in the living room, and she would move her head in a really weird way, like she was sensing air, something in the air. And my boyfriend at the time and I, we would look at her and we'd giggle because we didn't know. It was just, she was just acting weird.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a healthy dog. I think she was only five at the time. And his own cat, he lived in Oakland, she was doing the scurries. And, you know, Oakland definitely felt the quake, and there was a lot of damage there with the cypress structure. And his cat was sensing it as well. And our animals, those are just a few.
Hmm.
So many other anecdotes that I wrote about after. I was slammed with five assignments. In between aftershocks, I was playing journalist, you know, writing about disaster. It was exciting, but it was really nerve-wracking. I ended up putting my, I don't know, I guess it was typewriter in between a computer at the time. I ended up just sitting on the floor cross-legged writing because I was afraid it would fall. The aftershocks were strong.
Well, just going back to the pets, I bet that was the time for you, but I just want to go back to the pets for a minute. If they did the fight or flight and they're gone, are they actually... You know how when they talk about the tsunami that the animals all moved away from danger, are they moving away from danger and can they find their way back home?
They get disoriented because of the earth crust, the magnetic field. Pigeons have it. Even humans have it. Berkland believes that the reason why some earthquake sensitive humans get headaches right between the eyes, like a sinus headache.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, I did have that day. I had an extreme migraine and it was an Indian summer day and I went to bed, at 5 o'clock, you know, during the World Series. My head was just killing me. In retrospect, hey, I had a headache like earthquake sensitives get, because supposedly we have the magnetite right there in the pineal gland, and the animals have it. And so they get disoriented with the earth crust, and they just want to flee. They want to get rid of it. Just like...
But do they... are they usually safe from the actual damage? You know what I mean?
Cats are. Cats are really smart critters. Hey, you know, if something's going to happen, like the stranger comes right now to the door, my cat's very gregarious, but at first he's going to bail.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
That's just his instinct. My dogs, on the other hand, they're going to go greet everyone, you know, whoever is there.
But if a dog is running with a fight or flight, does it get itself to safety? I guess that's my question.
No, it gets disoriented. It gets lost and found. And so, of course, there's a lot of dangers if you have a dog running out on a busy highway, a busy road, unknown territory. No, it's not safe. You know,
okay.
A lot of lost and found dogs never return to their owners. I had three cats at the time of the World Series quake, and my most skittish, shy cat, he left. He didn't come back for 2 or 3 days. My most friendly cat, my big cat, Gandalf, he was outside after the quake, and his eyes, I was looking at him through the windows, and his eyes were as big as half silver dollars. I'm telling you, it was like, whoa, that was big. But he's a strong boy, and he came back in the house. And then Ashley, the Siamese, she came back in the next day, even with all the aftershocks. She came back in.
How long did the aftershocks go?
Oh, for a couple of weeks. It was intense. My father at the time was living in San Jose, and he was shooken up too, no pun intended. And my brother was living in Arizona at the time, and he already had a ticket to come visit his sister. And I tried to tell him, I said, this is a bad time. I don't think you really want to come here. Because we didn't know, that a 7.1 isn't the big one. That's just a major quake. Mm-hmm. It's not a great quake. An 8.0 plus is a great quake. We didn't know. That could have been a foreshock.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that it was it wasn't refundable. So he came out. He didn't get it. He's never been in a really, really strong quake like that. I slept with the lights on. I slept in my clothes. I had my shoes by the couch. I slept in the living room. I refused to sleep in the bedroom where it happened.
Mm-hmm.
I had my dog leash right by me. I mean, I was a wreck. My dad, if you touch him, he would, what? Is it an aftershock? I mean, it really, and, people are like this when you read about it in China and Japan. They sleep outside.
Mm-hmm. I can really see why.
Yeah, well, especially with the infrastructure in countries like that, because it's a lot different than here. And
mm-hmm.
like in Italy, where the whole buildings can collapse. I really doubt seriously that the house I'm living in would collapse.
Mm-hmm.
There might be some structure if we had a 7.5, some structural damage, like to the chimney for the fireplace. I live very close to the lake. So I am a bit frightened about a seiche. Geologists have told me that of a landslide, which could happen, like in Emerald Bay, it could cause a seiche in the deep, cold Lake Tahoe. And I don't think the wave, I'm not that close to the lake, I'm not right on it, but I do believe that water could come to the doorstep.
Well, so much as you said, it's better to know when the boogeyman's coming. Part of me would say, well, I hope he comes with chloroform, because I don't know if I really want to know.
No, it's great to know.
So what is the advantage? How can we prepare? How do you prepare?
I'm going to tell you how. Last year, just this time, we were having an extreme swarm 50 miles from me in Reno. They called it the Reno, Nevada sequence. Now, when they start calling a swarm a sequence, you're in trouble. The scientists were puzzled. They still don't know why it happened. The swarm wasn't happening on a known fault.
What do you mean by swarm?
A swarm is a cluster of earthquakes.
Oh, okay.
A lot of quakes. They were having hundreds and hundreds in April. Some of the residents did what the animals did. They fled. They couldn't sleep at night. These were shallow quakes. The scientists were telling us it wasn't volcanic. We didn't know what was going on. I was flooded.
And where exactly was this?
This is in Verde Mogul, very close to Reno, 50 miles from where I'm at, South Lake Tahoe.
And this was last April.
Yeah, it was. It made national news. Scientists from all over the nation were fascinated and puzzled. A seismologist there, the rumor was he moved away. That's scary. The weatherman that I know very well, somewhat, in Reno was asking me if he should get earthquake insurance. By the time I told him yes, it was too late. For the one insurance company had an earthquake moratorium. You couldn't get it. We ended up getting a 4.7 to 4.9 on April 25th, and then it fizzled out. The mayor had told us to expect for the worst. That's pretty scary. But the thing was, the night before we had the quake that woke me up, it was like 11:42 at night. The night before, I was on a radio show, and we had 2.4s. The swarm was increasing in magnitude.
This is while you were on the air?
Yeah.
Great.
And I was, it was Captain Jack, and they were fun. They knew I was amped. I'm an excitable girl, but I was really, I wasn't scared. I was more just excited. And the next day, I knew a stronger quake was going to come. And 3 hours before, I just got this burst of energy, and I started vacuuming the house for Mr. Quake. And I was too tired to go to the store, and I realized I didn't have enough bottled water if we had a really strong quake.
Mm-hmm.
So I had all these plastic jugs, and I filled them up with water for the animals and myself. I just got everything intact. I mean, I just wanted to be ready. I had the leashes by the bed. I had my shoes by the bed.
And you vacuumed your house.
I did. And I even went to bed early. I'm a night owl. And it was so cool. I mean, at 11:42, the windows started shaking, and I got so excited, I ran to the computer in my study where I'm at now, and I logged on to USGS, CA, Nevada, to see the quake, the big red square,
mm-hmm.
and then I called Jim Berklin at midnight, and I go, I got my quake, I got my quake. I was just, and then I started emailing the media, because I had predicted this earlier in newspapers. And the local newspaper. So I had predicted this puppy. And, you know, nobody was hurt, but it really, I mean, a lot of people felt it on the California-Nevada side. I think about 3,000 of us actually reported feeling it to the USGS. So, and
it's interesting that you didn't worry about turning your computer on.
I was too excited. When you predict quakes, it's just like the movie Twister.
Mm-hmm.
You see how excited they are chasing the tornadoes.
Oh, I know.
You're not, you know, I wasn't like his girlfriend that, you know, oh my God, you guys, you know, she's freaking out. You guys are really into this. I'm not like that. We wait for these quakes. It's what, we chase these things.
Wow. Brave girl. So you're prepared by bottled water.
Right.
By dog leashes.
First aid kit. You always want to have quake cash out. And just in case, if you really have a strong or a major quake, you know, if electricity goes out, like with the World Series quake, you know, the TV went out, some electricity went out. You want to have cash just in case the grocery stores are, you know, you can't buy anything if you don't have cash.
Right.
You know, you want, I don't know, candles, I have mixed feelings about that. You really don't want to light candles because if you have an aftershock, you're going to have a fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's, you can go onto the USGS, website and you can find out how to get prepared. Most states, there's only two states out of the 52 that are really quake safe. Almost every state can have an earthquake.
Mm.
You can go on to one of my sites, Earthquake Epicenter, and we have all this preparedness stuff which you can do.
Great. Well, so let's talk about your book, The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes. That was quite an earth-shaking book, really, in a way, wasn't it?
What made it earth-shaking was, at the time I was writing it, let's see.
What year did it come out?
Okay, it came out January 2006, and in June of 2005, California, oh, wow, we got a 7.2 offshore Northern California, and we had a tsunami alert that didn't go off. It was quirky for San Francisco, but there was no tsunami. And we had four notable quakes in California. We almost released the book early. I mean, California was getting pretty spooky. 7.2, a 6.7, then down Southern California, I think we had a 4.8, and then there was another strong quake down in Southern California. So it was that map was full of big red squares.
And you and Berklin were both aware that these were coming up?
Yeah, we were asking the publisher to, she was even considering releasing the book earlier. But, and also 2004, the Indian Ocean quake, tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody wanted the you know, the big waves book. So I had to add, I mean, I followed my proposal, and of course that wasn't part of it. But since that happened, I mean, it was so, I mean, gosh, I mean, everybody was overwhelmed with that. You know that. I mean, it was
huge.
And did
you know that that was happening?
Well, did I sense it? No, I did not. No, yes, I did, actually, in the book. I do talk about it. I personally did not sense it, but I did document other earthquake sensitives, and a lot of people were getting dreams that a tsunami was going to happen in that region. And what happens if you have enough sensitives all getting the same symptoms, the same dreams, the same visions, that's a red flag. Mm-hmm. And so looking at that again in retrospect, yeah, we sort of did know that it was happening, but no, that wasn't considered a hit for me because I'm not connected to Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm connected to the West Coast, to California, the Pacific Northwest, certain areas, but not that area at all. But no, it was fascinating because so many of the animals did head for higher ground, and they probably felt the vibrations of the tsunami. That's what scientists are saying.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's other anecdotal evidence that some of the animals may have sensed the underwater tremor, the quake.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, only the animals will know. Not all of the animals survived.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of stray dogs on certain beaches, like in Thailand, that, you know, they were washed away in the waves along with the people.
Mm-hmm.
It was devastating, though.
It was so much for the whole world, wasn't it?
It was.
Comprehend.
It really, really was.
And that was an earthquake way down low, right?
Yeah, it was an underwater quake. What was frustrating, and it's very similar to the Italy quake, is that Kerry C., S-I-E-H, he's a well-known scientist.
Mm-hmm.
He was over there warning the people. He was saying that this was going to happen, and he was passing out leaflets to tell people, you know, that this is going to happen, and of course people tuned him out. And it's the same thing with the Italian seismologist. He was going by the radar and emissions of Italy. He was a bit off. He wasn't, I just read recently, he wasn't right on target. He didn't get the exact day. So the government sort of poo-pooed his prediction.
Hmm.
And the government, I can understand, and I address this issue in The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes book, that the government isn't, did you ever see the movie Dante's Peak?
No.
Okay, it's about a volcano. The government doesn't want to alarm people, especially in a tourist town, especially during a recession, especially with real estate is, you know, having a hard time. Because if you issue a warning, if the USGS or the government issues a warning, and if you have mass evacuation, you have panic, you have chaos. If it doesn't pan out, real estate plummets, tourism plummets. And this happened back in 1980 during the Mammoth in May, the 25th or the 27th. They had 4 6.0s, and the USGS did give a warning. And guess what? That earthquake swarm did fizzle, like a lot of them do. It fizzled, but then tourism, you know, it was hurt. It was hurt, and so was the real estate. So
but then on the other hand, if they aren't warned and it happens, what happens to real estate?
That's true, but the problem is, how many times do you do this where you start crying wolf, just like with the, Hurricane Ike, the people were hesitant to evacuate, even after Katrina, because they had evacuated before, and sometimes it just didn't happen. And, you know, like you saw, you know, the footage, all the people would say, well, we're going to ride it out,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, sometimes evacuating is not fun.
Mm-hmm.
I did a was it last year or the year before, the Angora fire in South Lake Tahoe. I chose to evacuate because as a journalist I covered the firestorm in Oakland 1991.
Oh my.
And 25 people, they were incinerated. They burned in their cars because they couldn't get down the narrow road and the fire engines couldn't get up it. And I had to interview the people, the survivors, and how they lost their cats. And, you know, as a sensitive person, you know, it was very emotional. These people lost their beautiful homes, you know, upper middle class homes, and their pets and people and family. And the same thing could have happened here. The winds were, you know, it was forecasted that the winds could have gone up to 40 miles per hour.
Wow.
And if they did that, it was a possibility we could have turned our wildfire into a firestorm. Now, my brother, who lives in the back house, he didn't believe that because he didn't experience it. So he was going through denial. But I was going through the fight or flight syndrome. I was packing up.
Been there, done that. We're out of here. Right?
Yeah, but it was really a challenge to get him to, you know, climb on board and go with me. I chose to go to Reno, which was ridiculous. The fire wasn't going that far, but I wanted to get a pet-friendly hotel. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to be the worst case scenario for me. I didn't think we would lose the houses. I thought I did not want to be stuck on Highway 50, you know, in a gridlock with two hyper Britneys, with a cat, and my brother in denial and freaking out. He was kind of vacillating between the two.
Where's your sense of humor, eh?
Do you know what he did? Talk about sense of humor. I had him go down to our pet place, or pet store, to get the last cat crate for my cat. And I figured he'd be back within 20 minutes and we would just get the heck out of Dodge. Well, guess what? Brother disappeared for 2 hours. 2.5 miles from me, it was chaos. People were evacuating. I was getting phone calls every 15 minutes to tell me that we had, you know, we could voluntarily evacuate because the fire was coming closer. The smoke outside was outrageous. It was making me nauseated. So I knew I was leaving just for peace of mind. I couldn't stand it. And my brother disappeared. So he comes back 2 hours later, and I said, and I was already ready to go, and I said, where were you? Do you know what he did?
Mm.
He went to the driving range to hit a bucket of balls. What do you think of that?
That's kind of a denial, all right.
Yeah. And then
does he sense the earthquakes as well?
He's afraid of it. Mm. When he hears me scream, oh, my God, we got a 7.0. Oh, my God. He's there, la, 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 la. He can't handle it. He's extreme. I believe it's genetic.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very sensitive. As a little boy, I remember when he was 6 years old watching scary movies, he couldn't do it. He would put his hands over his eyes like in The Wizard of Oz with the flying monkeys. He doesn't like that. He doesn't like scary movies.
But, you know, we were talking about him being in denial, but isn't it true that a lot of people who are really sensitive will flatly refuse to even look at this subject at all?
Oh, yeah. They don't want to go there. Why would they?
Yeah, exactly. So let's get back to Berkland. I want to get back to a whole bunch of things, like the books you've been writing. And Berkland, he's been sticking his neck out and talking about earthquakes and when they're going to happen, making predictions that don't necessarily, you know, all have to happen, right?
Yeah, he's, after the World Series earthquake, he was suspended for 2 months because, for lots of reasons, but they just didn't want him to cause, you know, create panic because, you know, what if it was a force shock? And so they suspended him, and that's a big thing.
He said it was a force shock and not the actual earthquake?
He told me he did not say that. And evidently a reporter misconstrued what he said. I wasn't there, but in the book I say that, you know, I believe him that he didn't say that.
Well, tell me, how long was he predicting earthquakes by the time these all came together?
Why do I want to say 1974? I believe 1974.
And he's actually a geologist, eh?
Yeah, he's a geologist. He has about a 75% accuracy rate.
Mm-hmm.
Tell
me about the accuracy. Does that mean that, you know, we all believe in metaphysics that as you do the energy, you can actually release and expel the gases so they don't have to be quite so rambunctious. Is that so? Is that something you would say?
Rephrase the question.
Okay, when we've got an earthquake coming, if people work with consciousness, they can dispel the intensity of that earthquake.
It's funny you say that, because I wrote something down about that before this interview, and I believe that we can change certain things, and so does my visionary friend Clarissa Bernhardt, a collective consciousness. She believes it can go both ways. She believes that strong quakes, killer quakes happen during holidays because a lot of emotion is going around the world. Mm-hmm. And if enough people are giving out negative energy, that it could actually create quakes. But then if you turn that around and make a positive energy, because the mind is so powerful, you could switch it.
So that would tell me that, it's like I always say to people in my work, that predictions are meant to be played with, that you don't want predictions to be 100% accurate because it means we can't create anything, you know?
That's true. And I believe that if you envision something enough and keep, you can actually make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
You can make it happen. And I suppose you can turn it around and make it not happen as well.
Or like you said, it can be when people's feelings are collectively maybe a little more peaceful. Once I heard that if we stand and run energy from the earth up through our bodies, we can actually release gases that are pushing the plates apart down below, you know?
I believe it's possible, but I believe that we can only toy with destiny to a point, and I believe certain things are going to happen anyway, and we do not have any control over that, and that's where the preparedness comes in. Mm-hmm. It's not like I do this just because I want to get a hit and prove that, all right, I got, you know, I have a keen sense of sensing earthquakes,
mm-hmm.
but it's heightening the awareness and preparedness, because sometimes I believe we cannot stop these quakes. We can't stop Mother Nature. She's going to do what she's going to do, and she can be unpredictable, but we also can predict some of the things she's doing, and especially if we have enough tools. Like, you know, I tune into my own body cues, and the mind thing, that just comes. If I get a vision, I didn't ask for it, it comes. If I have a dream, I don't ask for it. It comes to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like my creative writing, the creative writing process. I don't ask for it. It comes to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gift, but it's a curse, as I was telling you before.
Well, it can feel pretty bad, can't it, sometimes? Like you're talking about people. I've got a friend who gets really awful headaches only when she believes that the earth is, not necessarily when there's going to be a capital E earthquake, but when there's vibrational activity going on.
I have to tell you, I haven't told anybody this, and I guess I'm just, I don't know, I'm going to...
I love secrets.
It's a secret, because I haven't told anybody. recently, we had a little girl in Tracy. She was kidnapped, and she was killed, and they found her in the river in a suitcase. You heard about that?
No, I try not to pay attention if I can.
Well, it was really played up on the news, because Tracy is pretty close to where I live. I mean, it's Northern California, and it was a huge thing for a cute little girl to be kidnapped and killed that way. The night before that happened, I had a very troubling dream where a girl was trapped and her mouth was taped. And the next morning, I got an email from a sensitive friend of mine telling me that she was really scared about this little girl and the outcome, because at the time she was still lost. And then I think a day or two later, she was found and she was killed.
Mm.
And that really bothers me, because I've never had that type of dream and that close to what happened. That would bother me if I continued to get more of those.
Mm-hmm. I told my guides a long time ago, when I was seeing things that were really scary, I'd say, okay, I'm willing to do this work, but please, I don't want dreams about or visions about things that I can do nothing about. I don't mind going through the muck with people or whatever, but please make it something I can do something about. Like,
that's true. There's
and it changed things. Things didn't come through the same kind of randomness any longer.
That's good for you. I know Dale Scher, she's a psychic. I've met her, and she's done a lot of crime work. And that way she can help people and to stop some things from happening. It's not that I want to go into that.
No,
and
I don't think so.
Yeah, and I hope that doesn't happen again. But I just find it, I don't believe in coincidences. It was just really bizarre for me.
Well, I'm very excited about your work, actually. I think it's wonderful. And talking about the fact that it doesn't always happen is also very encouraging to me, because I do think that you can make a difference, and you do make a difference.
Mm-hmm. The good thing is, though, it's not all negative. I do get positive images. I live in Lake Tahoe, and I do like to gamble. I will not gamble if I don't have that feeling, the same feeling as I do before an earthquake. That sixth sense, that gut instinct. And let's say when I go swimming down at the resorts, if I have that feeling, I will definitely gamble. And my accuracy rate's probably about 75%,
mm-hmm.
and I will pocket like $100 or $200 within 5 minutes, and I'll
Yay.
Walk out. Yeah, and that's what's positive energy. Or there's been times when some of my other books, we've sold foreign rights,
mm-hmm.
and like a week or a few days before, I get this feeling that I'm going to get a special memo from my editor saying we just sold foreign rights to a Russian publisher or Czechoslovakia, and it happens. And that's fun.
That is really exciting.
I know.
And let's talk about your books, because they're really exciting, too.
Yeah, we mentioned this the other day, how they're all really linked because they're linked to Earth, and I thought about that. I have a trilogy right now, The Healing Powers of Vinegar, the first one. The Healing
Powers. Cider vinegar or just vinegar?
I'm sorry?
Cider vinegar
all
or
of them.
Any
all of
kind
them.
Of vinegar?
I'll explain that in a second.
Okay.
The Healing Powers of Vinegar, The Healing Powers of Olive Oil, and The Healing Powers of Chocolate. And you had mentioned that they're somewhat linked to this Earth thing and the earthquakes, and they are, because they all come from the earth. Vinegar, apples and grapes, and olive oil from olive trees, and then chocolate from the cacao trees, the cocoa beans. And I just find that so fascinating. And they all come from biblical times, and same with earthquakes.
And you vibrate with them all.
Right. So the Vinegar book, what's the unique spin on this, and I think one reason why this book has been so successful is there's a lot of books out there on apple cider vinegar. But my editorial consultant at the time, it was his idea, and he wanted me to do this book. It wasn't my idea, it was his. He wanted me to do an entire book on red wine vinegar.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he believed, this is quite progressive, and it was a decade ago, he believed that red wine vinegar may have had the same resveratrol, which is found in red wine, which is heart healthy, good for your heart. It's a compound.
Hmm.
So when I started doing my research, I found out, I had a scientist do some testing for me with balsamic vinegar and red wine vinegar, and there was only trace amounts of the resveratrol. So I thought, oh, my God, I'm not going to lie.
What's it called, resveratrol?
Resveratrol, yeah. Yeah, it's an antioxidant, a
mm-hmm.
disease fighter, and
mm-hmm.
it can help you stay heart healthy.
Mm.
And it is found in red wine, without a doubt. There's no doubt about that.
Mm.
But since I found that out, I'm thinking, I'm not going to lie, so how am I going to write this book? And that's when I fell into the Mediterranean diet and lifestyle, which does include red wine, which I mentioned. And I did talk about the trace elements found in red wine vinegar, but that's how I teamed it with olive oil and the Mediterranean diet. So I fell into it. It was great. It was great because that's what I've always done. But I even got into this diet and lifestyle more, and it's fascinating. It's fascinating, and it's still today. 10 years later, I was telling you, just a study came out, a huge study that's been done for about 60 years, proving that the Mediterranean diet is one of the healthiest diets you can follow.
So, what is the Mediterranean diet?
It's very basic and it's very easy. I don't count calories at all. It's you eat all natural food, fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, whole grains, some fish, a little bit of eggs, a little bit of low-fat dairy. You can include red wine. I don't drink, so I don't do that. Olive oil is your main dietary fat. Forget the butter. You can have some sweets in moderation, though. Dark chocolate is now acceptable. They have the new the traditional Mediterranean diet. It's a pyramid, and we just got the new one that we're including in the chocolate book. They just renewed it, and I think they even updated it. So quality dark chocolate is part of that if you eat it in moderation.
Well, so let's go back to the vinegar. What is the healing properties of vinegar besides the heart healthy one in that aspect in red wine or red vinegar?
You mean why is red vinegar healthy?
Why is vinegar good for us?
Well, it could be good for you externally and internally. Apple cider vinegar, personally, I use it for home cures externally.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you this one anecdote. I had a book tour, and I have nice hands, but I had a wart on my thumb, and it was really unsightly. And I went to the dermatologist a couple weeks before the book tour, and she said that it was so deep that she would have to cauterize it at least twice. And she freaked me out. And I didn't want the pain of it. I didn't want the scar on my hand. And I wasn't ready for bad news. And I copped an attitude and I said, I'm out of here. I'm talking about fight or flight. And I went home. And this is after I'd written the vinegar book, way after, years after. And I tried it because apple cider vinegar actually has acetic acid. And so I put it topically on my thumb like 5 or 6 times a day, religiously, for 2 weeks. And do you know what? That wart totally went away, 100%. And I also did it from a plantar wart, which I must have picked up at the swimming pool. And that one took a little bit longer, about 3 weeks. I called the dermatologist, and I asked them if I did it, would I have to stop swimming, which I didn't want to do. And they paused, you know, a pregnant pause. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to try apple cider vinegar again. And it worked. It worked like a charm.
Wow.
I have really clear skin, but on occasion I might get a blemish. I tell you, if you put that on your face on the blemish, within 24 to 48 hours, it is gone.
Wow.
It is gone. It is just, it's really, it has so many home cures.
I know, I'm big on, I put a bunch of it in my bath, especially if you have aches and pains. It's really good for your skin.
Yeah, and olive oil's good for that as well, too.
I always say that I'm like a salad, so I'm going to get your book, but I think that I'm already living it.
Well, for weight loss, now, you know, summer's coming. I don't have a weight problem because I eat chocolate. I eat chocolate in moderation, and it curbs all my cravings for unhealthy sweets, you know, like cakes and cookies and pies and ice cream. I no longer crave that.
Hmm.
I will just have a piece of quality dark chocolate, and it's totally killed my sweet craving.
What kind of brand do you use? I mean, it's good to get the ones that don't.
There's so many that are out there. There's so many wonderful chocolatiers. I do love Christopher Norman.
Okay.
They're two chocolatiers in New York, and they've been very good to me. It's on my website right now, calori.com.
Okay.
Just go to the hot chocolate category, and you can just go onto their website, and they, it's so good.
Wow.
I mean, this is quality prestige chocolate. It's just amazing.
It's supposed to be good for our hormones and stuff, isn't it?
It can, if you feel anxious, and I have this in the book, the chocolate book, it can actually take the edge off anxiety. It has 350 to 400 compounds that are good for you. And dark chocolate really doesn't have that much caffeine and sugar in it. A lot of people believe it does, but it's a myth. You'll get more caffeine in a cup of coffee or diet soda. It has a lot of feel-good compounds in it, where it's really addicting, I'll tell you. There's no doubt about that. But if you're eating the quality stuff, it's good for you. And it does have other things like magnesium, which are good for our bones. So many things.
Wow,
and
that's
same,
really good to hear. I have to eat chocolate.
The same thing with olive oil and vinegar. If you have a weight problem, there's this gal, Woman's World did an article on my book, and I had her on my diet, the Mediterranean diet, and she lost almost 25 pounds in 2 months by following it. And what it was, she would actually take a tablespoon of the apple cider vinegar. I don't really like that, but some people do. Or you could put it in a glass of water, and using a little bit of raw honey will take the edge off.
Mm-hmm.
But that can suppress your appetite if you do it like an hour or half an hour before a meal.
Mm-hmm.
Because, apple cider vinegar comes from apples. It has fiber, and it really can suppress your appetite.
Hmm. The only thing about that I remember is that you got to rinse your teeth because it can really wreak havoc on
things. It is acidic. It is acidic, and the same thing with chocolate. I was so scared after all this chocolate that I ate. I made an appointment to have my teeth cleaned, and I was so afraid. Oh my God, what if I'm going to have 13 cavities? I didn't have one cavity, and I was really floored. But again, if you drink lemonade or orange juice, you're not going to do that before you go to bed because that's acidic too.
Right.
So, if you do the vinegar thing, rinse out your mouth, definitely.
Well, unfortunately, we have to end this, so I'd like you to end by talking about what the names of your books are, what your websites are, two of them, and how people can get hold of you if they'd like to.
Okay. Go to calorey.com. And you'll see all my books there, and you'll just see tons and tons of stuff there. Right on the top, there's categories about Cal books, and just click it on, and you'll see that. Or just go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and type in my name, Calorey, Calorey.com, and you'll see all my books. And for the earthquake stuff, if you live in a seismically active zone, or if you're thinking about traveling to a faraway country like the Mediterranean countries, Italy, Greece, or what's the other one that has big quakes? There's one other one. The other one. You must know. What's the other one? Italy? There's three of them. Italy, Greece.
It's not China, Malaysia.
No, China and Japan are definitely seismic. What's the other one? Italy, Greece. It's going to come to me.
Turkey or Pakistan?
No, it's the Mediterranean. Italy, Greece, and Turkey. So, yeah, if you're going there, you might
but
want
your to. But your website tells us where the activations are right now, doesn't it?
You mean where the activity is?
Yeah.
But the ring of fire is always active. You know,
mm-hmm.
The whole ring of fire, which goes, gosh, Japan, China, it goes all the way around the volcanic areas and all the way through Alaska down to Northern California.
Well, that'll keep us busy. How about the Northwest? Are we looking good right now?
That's funny. You know, you're close to, how far are you from Seattle?
I'm 100 miles north.
Well, British Columbia had a very aggressive swarm, which I did get a hit on. I was watching that the pattern of a swarm, and I knew it was going to escalate, and it did. And you had like about a 5.8 about a year ago there,
mm-hmm.
And then it stopped. Right now, I believe the Pacific Northwest is very, very vulnerable. From now through the rest of the month, March and April are very shaky months.
Okay.
And you've had... There was a lot of rain in Washington and all the flooding,
mm-hmm.
which affects the Earth's crust. It would not surprise me if Seattle or offshore Oregon or offshore Northern California gets at least a 5.0 to 6.0 from now through April 30th.
Well, thank you, darling. I hate to rush you off because I'd love to pick your brain some more and we'll watch your website. And I've so enjoyed this. I'm going to get some chocolate, some books. And keep track of you. Thank you.
Norman
so much.
Love. That's another one. Norman Love. Wonderful.
Okay,
wonderful,
you bet.
Yeah, and you can just find those on the website. Just type in Norman Love, Christopher Norman, and they're just to die for. Really.
Excellent.
And
thank
it's good
you.
For you.
Thank you so much.
All right, you take care.
You take care as well.
Okay.
Bye. Bye. That was Cal Ori, and it was a pretty interesting cross section of vibrations, the earth, and how to shift and change your life. This is Veronica Entwistle, and that was Paradigm Shifter. Next week is Caroline Corey, and it's going to be really amazing as well. And also, I remind you that on Live 365, we're just moving all the shows over, so all the archives are going to be running one after the other on Live 365. The name of the program is Conscious Energy. And this is, Thursday night, I'm going to be talking to Jackie Salvitti and her wonderful team on ET healing and explorations in consciousness at 8 o'clock. And next week is Caroline Corey. And I think we're going to follow through with some more of this explorations ourselves, looking past this normal and bringing in lights from beyond. So, and from beyond the third dimension, because I believe this. We're all learning to become energy vehicles and be multidimensional and be a participant in the shifting tides of the collective. So this is Veronica Entwistle sending you all much love. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to Cal Ori for her wonderful insights about being an earthquake sensitive and a chocolate sensitive. See you next week. Good night.